It's Wednesday night, August 13th, 2025. And I've got some real issues with Nick Fuentes I disagree with him on. So this is going to be a debate-friendly discussion, but I've got some real fundamental differences we're about to discuss right now. Straight ahead, he's connecting as we speak. Share the live feed at Real Alex Jones on X. It's 5 p.m. Central on this Wednesday evening, August 13th. August 13th, 2025, 5:02 Central Standard Time. I'm in Austin, Texas, and Nicholas J. Fuentes is in Chicago in his studios, and we are going to him live for a discussion, debate, but when he was on a few weeks ago, I've been up since 5 a.m. and I was extremely tired. I was not drunk, as some people thought, though I wish I was, he did a great job, and people enjoyed it, but I, you know, didn't bring much debate to it because I do disagree with some things. That always makes it more interesting to have a spirited discussion that brings out the best thoughts in people. But since then, I do have some disagreements on things like Trump wants, you know, a police state martial law. I mean, I think that goes too far, though the direction it's going at some point could become dangerous. But right now it's a response to all the tyranny and some other areas as well. And I just decided before we went live, so I'm not sneak attacking Nick with this. I made the decision on this. I said, hey, what topics you want to cover? Here's the topics I want to cover. They're basically the same topics. I never get into the infighting. I never get into all of the soap opera stuff that happens in conservative, populist, Christian, common sense media. But this infighting, or whatever you want to call it, with Nick Fuentes and Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson and now everybody piling on against Nick has to be addressed. And I was thinking about it literally 5 minutes ago. And, you know, Nick's a smart guy, so he doesn't mind something being sprung on him. And I'm like, let's go there first. Because I like all these people and I need them all to succeed, especially people like Elon Musk. And behind the scenes, you see Roger, the articles were publishing about trying to get him back in the White House. It was bad when he left. And a lot of the big problems started then. So I have had more people come up to me in the streets, on the hike and bike trail, family, grocery stores. I mean, basically everywhere I go, they come up and talk about Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson and, you know, all the rest of this, Candace Owens. And that's interesting. Because I know Buzz. I've been on the air 31 years, had success pretty much right away locally, and then within a few years got syndicated, and I had big success 25 years ago. So I know Buzzes when I see them. And this Buzz rivals Buzzes when I've, like, you know, go on Joe Rogan, and it gets 100 million views. I mean, I've I could count on one hand the times I've seen buzzes this big. When Trump's come on the show and stuff like that, this in ways is bigger. And that shows how seismic it is. And yeah, it's true. The attacks on Fuentes backfired. And it's making it exponentially bigger. And so it's just important, I think, from a 35,000 foot view, if Nick can do this, to analyze it as a political analyst and as a media analyst instead of himself personally. So there I sprung it. I want to do that first and go through the other topics with him. Nick thinks Trump's betrayed everything on the border and deportations. I'm tracking the numbers. I know the insiders. I know they dismantled it under Biden. He's scaling up. I know Trump's backed off some on, you know, the skilled visa stuff. So Nick's got his points. But still, I want to ask Nick, why are you just 100%, it seems, on Trump and not the Democrats? That's probably my biggest beef, because we can criticize Trump all day and try to keep him on the straight and narrow and be mad at him if we want and not even support him, but we can support good stuff he's doing. So why does Nick spend most of his time on Trump? And I think that's a legitimate question. We'll go to Nick here in a moment. But first, my message to the globalists, who are the real enemy, that they have awoken the terrible giant. And Trump's just a symbol of that riding in on the surfboard. We brought this global awakening, and it is supercharged right now. And the man of the moment, which once you hit this type of moment, it isn't a moment, it goes on, and it gets bigger, is Nick Fuentes. And I talked to him a couple weeks ago. I saw him on his own show that night because I watched part of it the next morning when I was working out. He said, yeah, I think they're going to try to come after me and kill me now. Well, they already have. I called him, and I said, let me tell you, I've been around the block. You better watch your ass, because you're about to go next level. And the Death Star is going to take a shot at you. So here's our message to the globalists. Remember, folks, they're the real enemy, and they're in trouble. Here is the terrible giant. We'll go right to Nick Fuentes. Everybody watching, share the live feed right now from his feed at Rumble, ours at Rumble, Real Alex Jones on X, Infowars.com/show. Share it, because this is going to be a lively discussion, a lot of inside baseball, a real debate, and more. We'll go as long as Nick wants to go. Stay with us. We are the number one hated and attacked media organization in the world by every evil, disgusting, sickening organization on the face of the planet. And I'm going to say it. If you're going to go as big as you can. That's why John Hancock literally saw people signing their names, little bitty, and people he knew signed them. You really couldn't tell who they were. And I get it. Every person signing that was signing their potential death warrant. He got up there and went boom. And he said, if I'm going to have the king coming after me, I want him to come after me, number one.
That's a pretty large signature, Johnny.
Yeah, I'm going to risk my life fighting tyranny. Anybody that's ever been in fights, you know, looking for fights, but you've been in a few, you learn, you hesitate when somebody's trying to beat the hell out of you. You're going to get your ass kicked. But you just decide to beat the living hell out of them and stop worrying about who's winning. And you're going to win almost every time, unless you're fighting Mike Tyson. I know people will knock you upside the head really hard and like sit back and look at what it did. Or somebody will hit you in the side of the head with a baseball bat and they'll kind of sit back and watch to see what it did. I'm like a Terminator. You're about to find out.
I'll shove that bat up your ass and turn you into a popsicle.
So that's what's going on here. And I love it because we're drawing their fire. We've exposed them. We've drawn them out of their rat holes to do all of this, the Soros scum and the Soros DA and just all of them, they're filth. They're disgusting tyrants. Just like judges in Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia. They're disgusting. And it's like we're in the dark and they got night vision. We're in a pitch black arena with no light and they've got their illuminators on and they can see us and we can't see them. Well, guess what? I walked over with my listeners collectively and pulled the switch and turned the lights on.
The real war's here with the globalists and Soros and Obama and the New World Order and BlackRock. They've declared war on us, and we accept the challenge. We're taking the country back.
Their attacks on Trump, their lawfare, all the criminal activity, how'd that work out for them? They were dumb enough to brag, remember, everywhere. It'll be over for Trump when this mugshot comes out in Georgia. We're finally getting it. Every channel, remember? It's the end, the mugshot, the mugshot, the mugshot. And then Trump nails it with a beyond Clint Eastwood, badass American Eagle gaze of total defiance that everybody looks at and knows deep down, that's the alpha male, that's the badass, that's the defiant real person. You can't fake that look. And then when they shot him, you got even more of that look, except the lips pulled down and the teeth bared and the eyes bugging out. Yes, yes, we get to see who's really who at times like this, don't we? And now the bad guys are going to find out who's really who, aren't you? Because the veneer of civilization is burning off. and all the posers and all the thugs and all the bullies who thought they had this country on its knees and cowed are now just beginning to understand that they have awoken the terrible giant! I got to sit there in Austin court. They didn't want me in the courtroom, but I was watching it because the judge hadn't called me with that Guerra Gamble that did that rigged court case with the show trial and all that. And after the debate tonight with Nick Fuentes, I'll give you a huge update. Remember how they did a fake auction and got caught and the judge said it was illegal? Remember how they closed the doors and turned the internet off and the judge overrode them? They just appointed a receiver and gave them the order to send in the Austin Travis County Sheriff's Department and seize the building when there's a stay and the federal judge has blocked it. And that's going to be huge when they come in here and grab the building and then a federal judge overrides them. It's cut and dry. But it's just like these federal judges saying Trump can't deport people when it's right in the Constitution. So, of course, it got overridden by the Supreme Court and other appellate courts. I mean, when you know the law, it's cut and dry. And she just did it again. And she told my lawyers, you can't talk. I'm doing this. So I don't know what the sheriff's department's going to do. I don't know if they come tomorrow, next week. I mean, you can't make up cliffhangers like this. So I'm pretty pissed off and wound up. So that's coming up. But it's also really good from what I've been told. I mean, this is crazy. But it shows how desperate they are. Now, I wanted to get Nick on, and I asked him to come on this week, to, you know, discuss the whole waterfront and you know where the world's going and you know also Netanyahu's trying to drag us into war with Iran again and all the rest of it and I wanted to debate him on the border and enforcement because I think Trump overall did the best job with the tools they have and they're gearing up. It'll be a friendly debate, but since then he's come out and said you know he thinks you know that Trump wants this as a police state so you know, for Israel or something, and Israel is involved with anti-free speech laws and training police and things, so You, that's actually a real fear, I believe, but I don't see that as why Trump's doing this. We'll debate that, and that's a real issue I disagree with Nick on. And I'm going to let him put out you know, his view on it. I don't want to misrepresent it. But as I just said in the intro, I don't think I've ever seen buzz this big on a topic. I mean, every time I go out in public and walk around at least 10, 15 people, you know, I mean, if I see like, you know, the guy comes to clean the pool or something, he doesn't bring it up. But I mean, if I get around a gas station, a grocery store, anywhere, multiple people bring up Nick Fuentes and this big battle, and everybody thinks he's being ganged up on, and he's a really smart guy, and, you know, wow, they heard he was a bad guy, but now they love his show. And the show's been big forever. He's been around, you know, 8 years or so, 9 years, but it's exploded. And I know when something explodes like that, I called him a week and a half ago and I said, you better get ready for the big attacks. And look, I'm not fighting with Tucker or Candace or Elon Musk. I love all those people. And I think they have their own, you know, perspectives and own, you know, their own issues. And I defended Tucker because he confided in me 2 weeks after his dad died when I was up there with him for a few days, having dinner and lunch, that wow, I knew he worked with the CIA because USA did and Voice of America and all that, but I didn't know he was high level, and he was high level. I said, Tucker, come on. You know, that's so I don't think Tucker's lying about that. So I've said my little intro, but just in general, I have been extremely famous for 15 years. I mean, really famous for 25, 30. So I know what it's like. I know what happens. I know how people get jealous. They come after you or they think you're a bad guy. A lot of stuff happens. And, you know, Nick's 26, but he's been, you know, active, you know, for politics for at least 10 years or so. So he's a big guy. But at the same time, it's this phenomenon that goes on that is a zeitgeist. And when you become the symbol of a zeitgeist, as I have been and as Trump has been and only a few others, and Tucker is kind of the voice of the populist conservative movement. He's an icon. When you get to that level, just a lot of things happen that are good and are bad. But bigger than Nick Fuentes is the issue of the symbol he's become and the fact that that's a bellwether or a canary in the coal mine that the Great Awakening's been accelerating for at least 10 years, but it's exploding now. And there is a total break with the system and anything seen as establishment. And so is it healthy to have all this fighting and all these people going after each other? Well, at the end of the day, it is healthy to have a debate about the populist movement and the Republican Party and our ongoing somewhat successful takeover of that. And so overall, this is very positive what's happening and really the end of political correctness. People not just minding being politically correct, but actually reveling in it, understanding that we've been bullied and intimidated, and that's a very healthy thing. But then out of that, you can swing too far to the other side, which, you know, I believe is a danger as well. So we are in a time of momentous change. You have a lot of people, the Democratic Party certainly still in their bubble, but a lot of Republicans that really aren't even neocons, but rub shoulders with both sides of the populist and neocon movement that, like Charlie Kirk, you know, that now are sounding now more like Fuentes. And then just like Fuentes at Turning Point, and, you know, all these other groups 8-9 years ago, they saw he was a smart guy, charismatic, you know, even when he was 18 years old, bring him in, hire him, and then try to send him to Israel and brainwash him and make him do that. That made him go the other direction. They kind of, I would say, accelerated him becoming what he is today. And it's the same thing when now Charlie Kirk is like, I have the Jewish lobby, the Israel lobby, calling up and threatening me, and I've been your greatest ally. How dare you? And that's how this process begins. And then you've got, you know, Flynn, who's like, hey, I'm a big fan of Israel, helped them, worked with them, on, on. But they stood down on October 7th. They're trying to drag us into war. They are manipulating the White House, and they're a danger. So I've got to come out against what's happening in Israel. You have to, okay? There's no other way. But then I don't want to be associated, not because I get attacked or because the ADL be mean to me, they already are, with the people that take it to the total cuckoo land and, you know, say evil only exists because of these interests when there's other fish to fry and other issues as well. Though Israel, through Netanyahu and others, is trying a full takeover in this power vacuum of the White House, so now I've gone great guns and said now this is the big central attack because it is true what people were saying in the past. It was partially true before. Now it really is, and so we have to just be honest about that. But that's not because I didn't hold back because I didn't want to be attacked. I was being attacked even more because I was attacking the policies of the globalists, which Israel supports, and others, and the Chi-Coms, all of them are in alignment. And so I was getting a big tent and mainlining this. That was what I was doing. But that was good in the past and helped build all of this. Now it's all out in the open. Now we move into the out-in-the-open mask-off battle. So that's a long 15-minute rant intro. I'm going to give Nick Fuentes the floor here for at least 15 minutes, and we'll start the debate portion after that, and I appreciate him being here tonight. And he's got his own stream coming up this evening as well at like 9 or 10 o'clock at night. He does it different times. To go wherever you want, but I'd like you to also spend some time addressing the attacks that have really, I mean, I'm not even looking for it, and it's everywhere. Phone calls, in my email, text messages. I go to X trying to look up Peace Summit stuff, and it's all, you just see everybody jumping on, piling on to get Nick Fuentes. And, you know, a lot of that is just, again, the dogpiling thing, you know, kind of a mass formation, mob psychology. And then I sit back and I go, if they're jealous or don't like you or think you're really the devil or a secret fed, that's the last thing you do, creating a mass Streisand effect. So the rocket your ass was strapped to 2 weeks ago now just is going 10 times faster. And so that is an amazing place to be. So that's just my gestalt stream of consciousness rant. Nick Fuentes, Nick J. Fuentes on Rumble, find you on X as well. thank you for being here. You've got the floor.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me. It has been certainly a strange couple of weeks with everything that's gone on. And, you know, I've seen people characterize it on Twitter, the sort of feud that's been going on with Candace, with Tucker, with Elon, with all these different figures. And I don't know that you would characterize it this way, but I've seen other people say this. They say it's infighting. And I don't really like that term because I don't think it does justice to what actually took place, which is that you and I were both really on top of this back in June. There was a war in Iran. It really all goes back to this, at least for me. And I think, you know, you asked me to kind of take the 20,000 foot view, the 30,000 foot view. To me, the 30,000 foot view has so much to do with the populist movement, with Trump, and with the situation in Iran as it has unfolded over the past few years. So going back to June, you and I were on this. I was doing these big streams covering the war. I did your show. You were doing huge streams covering the war in Iran. It was blowing up. I do this show with Candace Owens, who I've had a little drama with her in the past. I've also helped her in the past. So we've had kind of a relationship which has been characterized by sometimes friendliness, but sometimes negativity. And without relitigating the entire drama, we do a interview in the middle of the war, and we don't talk about the war at all. We don't talk about Trump. We don't talk about you know, our cancellation, the Daily Wire, any of these things. She's pressing me about drama, things like this. Now, some people thought it was an interesting interview. A lot of people are disappointed in what we talked about, or maybe what we did not talk about. Needless to say, there was this big reaction to how she handled it and that it was behind a paywall, all these things. Then she goes on Tucker, and Tucker Carlson calls me a fed. I do this big reaction stream to that. It clearly, that accusation backfires. Now, I don't know Tucker. I've never met him. I've never talked to him. But he seems to, without watching my show or knowing me, he seems to think that he knows exactly what I'm about and made a very serious accusation. Not only did he say that I'm an asset of the left or of the federal government, he says, but I'm this weird gay kid in my basement from Chicago. And who is this guy and all this stuff? This backfires. And then a week later, I get Elon Musk replying to Milo, accusing me of being a fed. And you take this whole thing together, and I wouldn't characterize that as infighting. I would say what that looks like to me is a coordinated attack. I think it stinks. I think it reeks of coordination because it's the same types of accusations coming from people that are all connected to each other. Elon replied to Milo. Milo did a show with Candace the week before. Candace did the show with Tucker the week before that. And Candace and Tucker did a show right around the time that she quit Daily Wire. So it's like all these people know each other. They're all connected and clearly talking in the same, you know, 2 to 3 week period. They're all saying the same things. And so it stinks to me like this is kind of like an avalanche. It's almost like a backlash against my popularity. And for me, the big question is this. I think everybody's assumption based on what has taken place in the past year and a half, ever since the war in Gaza, obviously there's this mass awakening about Israel and the influence of Israel and how that is detrimental to the United States, that we're being drawn into this conflict. We're backing a genocide. It's $30 billion in aid. It's World War III, all these things. And these figures like Candace and Tucker in particular, they rise to the surface and are elevated, whereas Tucker was at Fox News and Candace was at Daily Wire. Suddenly, they are these major critics of Israel. They're major critics of what's going on. Now, to the layperson, you would say they're kind of meeting me where I was. I've been on this, as you know, for 10 years. I was known as the anti-Semite. I was known as the anti-Israel guy. Now, the layperson would say Candace and Tucker are kind of coming around. They woke up. They got red-pilled. They're on the right side now. They're pushing the truth. And that's why there's this strangeness that it reeks of coordination. It reeks of this coordinated attack. And from the least likely people, you would think the attack would come from the usual suspects like a Ben Shapiro, a Charlie Kirk, who I have feuded with over the years, who are very pro-Israel, who are much closer to the establishment, that it would come from these relative outsiders that were jettisoned by Fox and Daily Wire in the past couple of years. that broke with that consensus view. For this coordinated attack to come from them is very suspicious. And I drew a lot of attention to that on my show, the suspicious nature of it, and said, you know, maybe things are not as they seem. Now, you know, as far as you're concerned, you know both Candace and Tucker. You had Candace on your show last week. I know you're good friends with Tucker. And, you know, I saw what you said. I appreciated that you defended me from the accusation that I'm a Fed. But what I would say is this, this is sort of where I'm at psychologically. I don't know Tucker. I don't know Candace. I don't know her well. I've obviously met her and had my interactions with her recently. But I would say this, if they are good faith actors, if they're honest journalists, if they mean what they say and say what they mean, if they are who they say they are, maybe this is all just a big colossal misunderstanding. Maybe they legitimately have real concerns about me. Maybe it's not coordinated. And to that, I would say, why doesn't Tucker Carlson have me on his show? Better yet, why doesn't he talk to me on the phone privately? I don't need the clout at this point.
Well,
I mean, the whole feud blew up.
I'll shut up, but that's where I was going to go next. I can call Tucker and ask him, can you imagine if I hosted a debate even remotely, and I'd be fair, that would be massive. Everybody wants that. I mean, I know Candace asked you for another debate, and usually, you know, the person that loses, and I would say she did, you know, wants, you know, another one. But you and Tucker, that would be the new debate. You would accept that if I hosted a debate with you and Tucker?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you could call it a debate, a discussion, whatever you want to do. I would do a debate, absolutely, because, you know, he made specific claims pertaining to Joe Kent. He said the reason that he's suspicious of me is because of my attacks on Joe Kent. And I've said this to you and I've said it to Candace, and I've been saying it to anyone who will listen, in fairness, almost to the point of being a nuisance. I've told that story about Joe Kent for many years.
Even politicos, a lot of people don't really remember Joe Kent. Why don't you recap people that don't know then?
Sure. So Joe Kent ran for Congress in 2022, and he received some backing from Peter Thiel, and he had a mutual friend, Matt Brainerd. Matt Brainerd was his first hire on his campaign. He was a consultant. Brainerd was at AFPAC. He was at my convention. And long story short, Joe Kent attacked me in 2022. I initially supported him. I talked to him on the phone. We were going to send the Groypers out to Washington to help him. And out of a clear blue sky in 2022, he launches this attack on me and says that he condemns me because of my opposition to Israel and because I talk about race and religion. He said that my message does not fit with inclusive populism, which is his vision. Now, in response to his attack, I mobilized the Groypers to Washington, and the Groypers that were going to help him then were hurting him. And I said, we will not reward betrayal. We will not reward people that claim to be America first, but are really Israel first. We're going to make an example out of him. Now, Joe Kent lost. It was a major upset. That was rated as a safe Republican district, and he lost by like 1,000 votes. And so credibly, you could say that I caused him to lose. But I caused him to lose to make an example out of someone that says they're America first, but when the chips are down, they're really Israel first. Now, Tucker was good friends with Joe Kent, and they had this relationship. Tucker promoted Joe Kent on his show. And I think that Tucker blamed me for the loss. This is his friend. And he said, oh, you made my friend lose. What motivation would you have to see this guy who purports to be America first? Why would you want to take him out? And so Tucker then worked with Max Blumenthal on a hit piece in the gray zone. And that's where all this you're a federal agent accusation originated, was from a hit piece in the gray zone in February 2023, just a couple of months after Joe Kent lost. And, you know, so maybe that's just a misunderstanding, but I have said repeatedly, I did not come at Joe Kent randomly. I didn't pick on him because he was great. I was supporting him. Then he disavowed me because I criticize Israel. Like, it doesn't get more on the nose than that. And so I would either like the opportunity to tell Tucker that or to debate about that. But for him to say that, you know, I'm like mobilized by the intelligence agencies or by the left to take out Joe Kent because he's a legit fighter for America first, you know, that's just not true. And, you know, it's on Twitter for everybody to see. You could still find those tweets. They're still up there. And I've been consistent on that story for 3 years now. So anyway, so that was the basis of his attack. And if I could sit down with him and really just squash the beef, And you know me, I mean, we've had debates and we've had interviews. I'm a big boy. If Tucker wants to give me the Ted Cruz treatment.
No, I mean, when you were here with Kanye, I called you baby Hitler. And I meant it as a joke. But you know, other people would have, oh, how dare you? You just made it. But the point is, we've had some real debates.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to back down or shy away from the questions. And as far as Tucker's concerned, I, like you, want to see America succeed. I am not one of these people that is advocating for violence or for civil war or anything like that. I actually want Trump to succeed. I want America to succeed. I want the border to be closed. I want to avoid a conflict in the Middle East. Tucker has been working to prevent a war in Iran. So have I. I've been calling that, and so have you. I mean, so I look at the three of us as very aligned on certain things, things that are good for America, like being against the war. And that's why it's puzzling that for 3 years, Tucker's, or 2.5 years, Tucker's been working against me in this way, making these accusations. And here's the thing. Tucker has 17 million followers. He's got a massive show. If he is promulgating this idea that I'm a Fed in private and in public, that's very damaging for me. And so when I go on my show and say, why is he doing this? Is it because his dad is in the CIA? I'm defending myself. I'm being put in this position where very powerful, influential people with credibility in our movement, whether it's Candace or Tucker, and maybe they don't realize that. Maybe because I'm very popular and I have a fanatical following, maybe it's easy to forget. I'm being charitable here. I'm being nice. Candace has 7 million followers. Tucker has 17 million. I just got unbanned on Twitter last May. I'm not allowed on YouTube. And that's not to play the world's smallest violin for being censored, but it's to say I'm kind of the new kid on the block. I just emerged from being censored all this time. For them to be calling out this orbital strike on my reputation, saying I'm a Fed and making these accusations, and in private, I mean, I have many people I know saying, oh, I have a mutual friend that's insisting you're a Fed because Tucker said so. Like, that's a big problem for me. And so that kind of punching down, it's not really cool. And it's especially not cool when I don't even have the opportunity to defend myself. And I just don't get where all that tough guy stuff goes. He calls out Ray Epps, who he accuses of being a Fed, to go on his show. He calls out Ted Cruz, all these people, but then does a 15-minute drive-by shot on me based on factual inaccuracies. And I don't get the right of reply. I don't even get, an acknowledgement. It just stinks like bad faith at that point. So that's where I have to really fight back. So that's sort of where I am in the whole drama. I don't understand these people. I don't know them. All I have to go by is I know me. I know I'm legit. And if they're calling down these strikes on my reputation, I got to question, who are they? And when I look at them, if they're calling me a CIA agent, it's like, well, that's pretty rich, because we don't have to go in. I don't want to use your platform to attack your friends. But for them to use that attack, it's pretty rich, because Joe Kent, who is the subject of all of it, he's a CIA officer. So did Tucker not know his dad was in the CIA? He doesn't know Joe Kent is in the CIA, yet he knows for a fact that I am. How does that work? Joe Kent, his close friend, and his dad are both in the CIA, to his shock and surprise, but he doesn't know me and doesn't watch my show, but he's absolutely certain that I am intelligence. Now, that's rich and very ironic and also very hard to believe. So, you know, it is with a little bit of, uncertainty, I guess, about their motivations. It's sort of hard to piece together the narrative, I did a good job of it.
So I'm going to be able to continue. And I want to tell you why they think that. And I was there. I understand. I know what happened that day. People got hyped up. I know the inside baseball because I had one of the big J6 lawyers, Norm Pattis, who was for the Proud Boys and others and the Oath Keepers. And I know that he was your lawyer as well. And people go, oh, they got the same lawyer. They're working for the secret group, too. So I get the same stuff. No, there's only certain lawyers that have balls to actually go in and do this, because they try to disbar them. They try to put them in jail. They put a bunch of Trump lawyers in jail, for heaven's sakes. But I knew behind the scenes, they're saying he's on a no-fly list. They didn't seize his bank account. They're not subpoenaing him. They're not. I was getting subpoenaed, too. You were the J6 committee. I know all that. So they don't do that to their operatives. You don't have Bill Barr with this new Veritas video where they got the text messages, the emails threatening the lady at the PR firm with Armstrong Williams, reportedly, and Bill Barr, Trump's former attorney general, running around with Fannie Willis in Georgia, literally helping her develop the plan to indict Trump for racketeering, which they did. And there you are in the hit list to put in jail on January 6th, and later you're on the hit list. So that right there, folks, when you're on a Bill Barr hit list, and that's confirmed, because he's like right at the top of this thing, former high-level CIA attorney general twice for H.W. Bush, the W. Bush. You don't do that. And I mean, that is just a fact. And so we can get to some of that coming up because I think that's important to get on the record here. But this is the issue, Nick. And I know you've released the emails, the text messages, all of it. We go to the ellipse, and then Trump says march down there, and it's all, hey, people have gone to the Capitol. It's fun. We don't know what's going on in there. You're down the road. You hear what's on the internet. Okay, go in the Capitol. Okay, people got hyped up. People got excited. I saw a lot of other people that went in and did the same thing. You didn't go in. Now, you can still say, though, all right, he didn't get indicted. Well, you weren't even at the Capitol, and you didn't go in. If you would have been there, I think you might have been. But the point is that they protected Ray Epps, who's running around for days saying, go in, break in, do all of this. And so I think that piece of evidence alone doesn't make you a Fed. Then I know the inside baseball, because I had the same lawyer, and you've now released all the documents, the stuff that went on, that wasn't, you know, fake. And I've had to use lawyers to get undebanked and had to move banks. You have to file lawsuits. And then people say, oh, no, that's how they got control of him and all the rest of it. So I've been through this so much internally myself that I know the lay of the land because I was there. And then I experienced it. And then I followed the case. And then I had the same lawyer. And so that's the reality of all of this. But this is the clip that, you know, that has Tucker concerns. I want to play it so you can respond. Here it is. So you have to remember the climate at the time. Democrats were taking over capitals all the time, having protests, sit-ins. They've done it recently in Michigan and Georgia, and it's not called a terror attack. And I've seen your description of what you were saying, and I understand it from the time that we're all angry. They've stolen the election. That's confirmed. You're called there. You go there. I saw you a few days ago in a clip. Describe this if you could repeat people that information, because I mean, I believe it. I buy it.
Yeah. So as you know, the January 6th protest, this is something that I almost wasn't even going to attend because at January 6th, it was basically over. The whole plan for Stop the Steal, there were all these different deadlines, and the goal was to get the state representatives in the state capitals to take back the power to appoint the electors that would go and make the decision. So there were all kinds of deadlines about certifying the election, picking the slate of electors, all these things. By January 6th, we knew it was over. We knew that probably Mike Pence was not going to do this option where he would not read some of the votes was one of the that's why Trump had a big problem with him, because the play was that he would decline to read the votes from the states where the result was contested. We knew that wasn't going to happen. Now, for that reason, I said, I don't even know if I'm going to go on January 6th to the speech on the ellipse. Because that was the event. For those that were in the know, January 6th was supposed to just be Trump for the first time was working with Women for America First, Stop the Steal, all the big organizations that organized the protests. For the first time, the White House was collaborating with them to do a big thing.
And by the way, I can verify all that because I started the event a month before for the date down the road in a smaller area. The White House calls. They said, hey, we want you to run it. Because people that don't know, they can't use federal funds for that. They wanted me to work with donors and move to the ellipse and raise like $5 million. I said, I'm not doing that. I handed it off to the Republicans. I said, I'm not involved. I've raised $350,000 from listeners. I gave them the money. Didn't keep a cent of it. That I raised from listeners. And because I didn't want to manage something like this. I can't manage a dinner party, much less that. We weren't going to have Trump at our event. We were just going to have a rally as we'd had many before the months before. One of them had a half million people there. So absolutely, I can vouch because I was there for all of this, and I can also vouch that I said this the first day. I don't think Trump was involved, and I'm not interrupting, I just want you to integrate this in. They wait. There's like a million people there. Only 30,000 can get in the cordoned off area at the ellipse. They're all over the Washington Monument, everywhere, red hats everywhere. I'm sitting there in the front row. It's freezing. You were in there too, right over from me. And then halfway through, Trump goes, march peacefully to the Capitol. The Secret Service opens the gate in front of me. I go into the backstage. They take me through, and they open me out on Pennsylvania Avenue and go lead it. And I go lead it. Hundreds of thousands had already marched. By the time I get there, it's total bedlam. The internet doesn't work. The phones don't work. Everything's jammed out. There's so many people. And I had no idea what was going on. But then I had these special operation guys, former Delta Force guys and people. They're like, well, they're like, it's obviously staged. You know, we got Antifa up there because they'd already gotten there right when it was starting. They said, you know, they ran down to meet us. They go, because the phones wouldn't work. They go, you got to get down there and tell them not to go in. This is a setup. So I run, you know, as fast as I can with no Achilles down there, get hit with tear gas, trying to stop people going in. So sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to give the backstory of that. And clearly I then felt, not by Trump, but insiders knew there was a setup working inside the administration. Bill Barr, we now know, who was on the ground and caught organizing it with the Democrats, that we were all set up and we were all told to come there. You, the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, all of us to be set up. I think that's a 2 + 2 = 4. Sorry, Nick, go ahead.
Yeah, and so my experience on that day is that I showed up in a suit and tie. You know, I didn't come in like commando gear because we really thought we're going to this speech. And then that was it. That was the speech, and Trump was going to talk, and then we were all going to go home. I think we even had an interview planned with you. I think I was planning to talk to you.
Yeah, we had rented the media roof across from the Capitol, which anybody can pay $5,000 and get, by the way, for the day. And so I'm above the Capitol, and I was doing all these interviews. And then the left said, indict Jones. He was perched on a building to run the attack. No, I'd rented that place 3 or 4 times before. I was right by CNN and ABC News, but absolutely. We had an interview that night booked.
Right. And so point being is like, I didn't have any plans to even be at the Capitol building. I was going to go to the ellipse, watch the speech. I had a VIP pass. I was literally right behind you. And what changed is that, as you said, and everyone can confirm this who was there, Trump said in the speech, we are going to go and peacefully make our voices heard outside the Capitol. And there was like a rumbling that you and Trump were going to lead the march, and you left early. And I said, oh, that's the program. I guess we're all going to the Capitol. And you're right. The phones weren't working. Anyone who's been to a baseball game or a concert knows how that goes. When you're in a high density area, the cell doesn't work. So we said, okay, I guess we're just going to the Capitol. So we walked to the Capitol. By the time I got there, the barricades surrounding the Capitol complex on the lawn had already been taken down. At that point, which had happened earlier in the day, the protesters had already gotten onto the lawn and were on the steps of the building. So I arrive at the Capitol, and I'm there with like a group of a half dozen people, fans of mine. We're taking pictures. We're hanging out. I don't think we ever got closer than 300 feet from the Capitol. We were on the lawn. And somebody came up to me and said, oh, you know, you got to give a speech. You got to give a speech because this was the program. You and I had done this at all the state capitals. I was in Lansing, Atlanta, Harrisburg, Phoenix, D.C. And we gave speeches with megaphones at the governor's mansion at the state capitol.
You climb up on the highest statue or object, and you speak to the crowd.
Right. We did it in D.C. We did it at Million MAGA. There's pictures, videos. So somebody said, oh, this is an historic day. You got to give a speech. I said, well, find me a megaphone. Somebody, some orbiter, you know, some fan of mine zips off, grabs a megaphone, brings it back. We look for the highest place. And that statue that you see me on there, that was Peace Circle. You could look at a map of the Capitol complex. It's 500 feet from the building. So, you know, and I think that's a big part of the missing context is people look at that video, they see the speech, and they imagine maybe I'm like guiding people into the building. I was 500 feet away from the building. And so when I'm saying, you know, take down the barricades, there were barricades on the lawn, which people were already on top of. There were barricades on the lawn in front of the Peace Circle, which that is what I was referring to. And I was saying, because the idea was, this is what the chatter on the ground was, we were going to protest on the lawn until they came back in session and gave Trump the election. The idea was this was like a protest. So when I said, you know, we're going to hold the Capitol, it was like,
and
we're
I
not going to leave until...
I said the same thing in the weeks up to it. I said, we're going to peacefully, that was even, I think we even had a website, peacefully occupy the lawn until they actually have an investigation in Congress into the election fraud.
Exactly. And this is how this stuff goes. People don't realize when you're in the heat of the moment and there's no plan like that, there's just like this chatter that goes on the ground and you get these ideas and, you know, it's like a mob thing. And so you're there and we're saying to ourselves, okay, we're here on the Capitol complex. Mike Pence did not do what Trump wanted him to do. They shut down the session where they were counting the electoral votes. And we said, yeah, like we're not going to leave until they, you know, choose Trump in the election. That's the basis of the speech on Peace Circle. But then we start to get word that the cops are coming in heavy. We get word that special forces are coming in. They're throwing tear gas down on the lawn. So me and the whole group I was with, we said, let's get out of here. And so people like to say, oh, you sent people into the Capitol, but you nothing happened to you. Every single person that was with me in that video did not get charged. That whole group of people, and by the way, we weren't on restricted grounds. The only people that got charged were people that were in the building.
But Nick, they the mezzanine. Did try to charge you. That was, and I had the same lawyer, so I mean, and you've released the documents. They did subpoena you. They did come after you. They did call you before the Jan 6 committee. We have Bill Barr, and we should get to, and I don't want to spend the whole night on that because we've got a lot more to hit, but I actually have the clips of the whistleblower with the documents, you know, Nick's name, my name, General Flynn, how they want to take us down for Jan 6, and then 2 years later, 2023, because you were still seen as a supporter of Trump then, and, you know, I already showed this Friday and I already showed this Monday, but this is all right here. Project Veritas, part two. Whistleblower Bill Barr held secret meetings to plot prosecutions of Trump and block his political comeback. But the bigger story is, and his, what they thought was his biggest supporters, and Nick is on that. You don't get on the Bill Barr hit list if you're Ray Epps. Notice Ray Epps was not on the list.
Right. Well, and not only that, as you said, I got my bank account frozen. I got put on the no-fly list. It's in the New York Times that they were considering hitting me with charges. I got subpoenaed in 22. And I mean, maybe the coup de grace is that I testified under oath that I never interviewed with law enforcement, which I did not. I never talked to the FBI. FBI never came to me, never talked to any law enforcement or intel agency. And I mean, look, my bank account got frozen and this happened without them even telling me. Eventually, after 2 weeks, the bank told me who froze the money. They gave me the phone number of the lawyers that put the legal hold on the account. I sent it to my lawyers immediately. My lawyers called the U.S. attorney. And then they said, you're under investigation because of this Bitcoin transaction, which I discussed on my show on Monday, and your placement on the Capitol complex. Now, when I got subpoenaed a year later, after the money had been frozen and unfrozen, after I got put on the no-fly list and taken off, I testified under oath. I never had any contact with federal law enforcement in that way. And as you said, I mean, Ray Epps, for all that people say about him, he got charged also. So it's like people say, well, you know, nothing happened to you. Well, things did happen to me. Well, then they say you didn't get charged. Okay, but people did get charged and then informed. Brandon Straka got charged and informed. Ray Epps, allegedly was an informant, he got charged too. So you have to take it on a case-by-case basis. And in my situation, they were interested in me because I was a Stop the Steal person. I think they investigated because they thought I was in the building because of a case of mistaken identity. They investigated because of this Bitcoin transaction, which was unusual. And I think they came to the conclusion I wasn't in the building. The Bitcoin transaction was, although it looked suspicious, it was benign. And then I think ultimately they dropped it. And
we also had MSNBC and CNN running images of you and I and others in different state capitals like Georgia, where we were invited and were peaceful and occupied peacefully. And they show us walking up the stairs and they would show and go, look, there they are in the U.S. Capitol on J6. So incredible levels of disinformation.
Absolutely. And in my case, a former friend of mine, Baked Alaska, he was live streaming inside the building. There was a screen grab from the stream of some other guy standing behind him. And there were posts that went viral saying that that was me. We were wearing completely different outfits. I was wearing a suit and tie and a long coat. This guy was wearing a scarf and a hat and a jacket. But people were saying in tweets that got millions and millions of views, that's Nick Fuentes in the Capitol in Nancy Pelosi's office. And I literally went to Mark Randazza. I have the contract of a famous defamation lawyer. I think I paid him $10,000 to investigate if I could pursue a defamation case against a couple of left-wing journalists, against a couple of media outlets that made that claim. Because I'm sure that was ran up the flagpole to the DOJ and they said, oh, that's the picture. Then that guy got arrested. Like that guy was identified and arrested later. It was a case of mistaken identity.
I understand. That's why I can clear you. I mean, look, I'm not God, but 99%, I believe you. I was there. I know your lawyer. I know the inside baseball. I know what you went through. It was all real. I get it. People say, oh, they're attacking Jones. It's part of the cover. It's fake. No, it isn't fake. It's real. So we just spent 40 minutes on this. It was very important. I really want to get into the issues we kind of agree on and disagree on in the time we've got. So just let me budget out time. Nick, how long? Are you good for another hour?
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah, let's do another hour.
Okay, but I'm going to give you the floor right now on the bigger issue. Just as a media analyst, smart futurist guy, you know, very good at predicting things. You predicted Trump would really have big trouble with Israel trying to control his administration. I don't think they're totally in control. They're certainly trying, so we've got to deal with it. I want to get into Iran, how they're trying to get back in there. You're, from what I've seen, saying Trump does want a police state. I disagree, at least so far. I want to get into all that with you. But what is it people want to know personally, what it's like for you to have everybody pile on to you, which I would have told these people, actually did, some of them. I said, if you think somebody's bad, you understand doing this to make them bigger. And so this is exploded and it's only getting bigger now. And I'm one of the few people that's experienced what you've gone through multiple times, like many times, but I wouldn't even say, well, I've had deplatforming and big blowups that have been as big as this. Okay. There's not many people other than like a Trump or even a Tucker getting fired at Fox that have had a blow up this big. So clearly, I don't think you started this blow up, and I can see both sides of the beefs and everything, but just what is it like for you now? And then just saying you're not Nick Fuentes, but you still have your brain, what do you think is going to come out of this? I think it's the right move, a smart move, a good move to say, hey, just debate me or have a friendly discussion. And I think it needs to happen. And I'm talking about Tucker specifically. And, Elon is a regular listener, and we've had some big, long discussions on air. I think you should talk to Elon. I think Elon should talk to you. He hasn't done these spaces in a while. They get hundreds of millions of views. I don't know why he doesn't, or listeners. Donald Trump got over a billion. I think people want open discussion. We know they want it. And populism and freedom is the hottest thing. Why not take it to the next level? I'm not somebody that courts raw controversy for no reason. I don't go around and they call it infighting, but insert myself in these things. I try to be the peacemaker. People I think are overall doing good work, even though they disagree on some things. But I know they know this. The people that have attacked you, they've been hurt by it. You've been helped by it, and they're doing good work. I would like them, like when Trump 40 days ago came out and said, "There's no Epstein, shut up." I said, "I've never seen any evidence you really involved anything bad. Why are you doing this?" you need to stop it. It really hurt him in the polls. So that's my philosophy, is targeting the globalists and focusing on them. If Republicans or populists do something bad, I will report it. But the Democrats are so much worse, I spend 90% of my time on them. Trump does this stuff, shove about Epstein, he killed himself, he didn't do anything wrong, he wasn't human trafficking, he had no accomplices, there was no blackmail. I'm like, do you understand this is the biggest Streisand effect ever? Day one. I got huge backlash from the, you know, kind of Israel lobby that says, we're MAGA, you're a panicker, the same groups that attacked me when I was, you know, against going to full war with Iran. So I could see it was synthetic coordinated attack. And then I pull back from that. And the day one, I said, Trump's behind this ordered cover-up. And then 2 days later, he's like, yeah, I'm the one. Shut up. It doesn't exist. Well, I mean, of course I knew that. Then I made calls and confirmed it. Then I made calls to talk to folks that were in long meetings with him. Then I learned a lot of stuff I'm not even allowed to say. I halfway leaked it. You know, they stuck his wife in there and other lies, pissed him off. They knew what they were doing. And you can give your own opinion of where you think this is going. It subsided some. If you'll just stop saying, don't talk about it, you know, it'll probably go away. But I'd like to get to the bottom of it. So that's kind of a, again, stream of consciousness on that. So take some time here. I'm trying not to interrupt. And what is it like personally for you? And then where do you see this going? And then do you agree with me that the fact that so many people across the political spectrum in the world are really galvanized around you and supporting you, that is not just because you're smart and well-spoken and all the rest of it, because people piled on you, which is so obvious, and people want the underdog. They can see it. I've experienced it myself. But this is also a bigger symbol of the total collapse of faith in the system. But people that still try to blame both sides and act like they're anti-establishment, but then still kind of go after whoever they see on the leading edge of intellectual resistance, that's just not smart to turn the country and the world around. And we want to overcome all this bullying culture and intimidation and just break it. And you're doing that, and I'm trying to do that. And so it just doesn't seem wise, but it is a big complex amalgamation. So I can see how people see you as an easy target, but not in this climate. I mean, I agree with a lot of what you say. I think you're smart. I've liked you. I've known you for 8 years. And you're a popular guest on my show. And I'm all about good thought and discussion and debate. And, you know, what the listeners like, I'll give my ideas, you give yours. But, I mean, I could see years ago, and I told the crew, I said, Nick Fuentes is going to get bigger and bigger. And I said, and I've tried behind the scenes to influence you some, saying, hey, you might want to press the gas so much they're going to kill you. But that's not because they're telling me to do that. I'm getting money to do it. I'm like, you know, fly too close to the sun here. But it doesn't matter. That's where we are anyways. And so it's kind of damn the maneuvers, go straight at them. So that's my rant. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of how it feels, it's a little bit frustrating because I feel like for as long as I've been doing my show, for as long as I've been doing this, and as much as people talk about my motivations or who I really work for, you know, this kind of stuff, all I've ever really wanted is for people to listen to my ideas. It's just to listen. And what I think really resonated with people when I clapped back on Tucker, it wasn't even so much, I spent 3 hours talking about the CIA and all this stuff. The part that resonated was the very end of the show, where I addressed the personal attacks. Because in addition to him insinuating that I work for intelligence or something like that, he said I'm a weird gay kid in a basement from Chicago, I'm a child. And in the clip that went viral on TikTok and Twitter, I said, did you forget when you did that part of your show that you're always pandering to the young white men? Isn't that kind of like the lead? Isn't that like the story of the past 10 years is the young white men who have no meaning in their lives, who are struggling to get married, who can't afford a home, who don't feel any allegiance to the country. They don't feel like they're a part of the country. There's no society. There's no social fabric. It's like, did you forget that, you know, those are the people that you purport to care about, that you're trying to win over, you're defending their interests? And in the clip, I said, I am that guy. Like, I'm of that demographic. I'm 26 years old. I was born in 98. I'm Generation Z. I said, and like the Turning Point students, the chapter leaders, like all these people, I went to a selective school. I dropped out. I come from a working class family. College was very expensive. I got canceled because I supported Trump in the 16 election. You know, he woke me up. Like, I went through all these things that they're always talking about. I'm facing these challenges they're always talking about.